Welcome to another episode of Law and Religion Down Under. I'm your host, Jeremy Patrick, convener of the Law, Religion, and Heritage Research Program team at the University of Southern Queensland. This bi-monthly podcast is all about the fascinating and complex interactions between the world of law and faith in Australia, and every episode will feature an interview with a different guest. My aim is to provide insight and perspectives from across the spectrum of religious and ideological beliefs. My guest today is Trevor Bell, the solicitor representing the Noosa Temple of Satan in its lawsuit against the Queensland Department of Education over whether Satanism can be included in the state's public school religious instruction program. Trevor, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Jeremy. It's a pleasure.
I know we have a lot to talk about to sort of unpack this controversy. Maybe just in a nutshell, could you sort of introduce the listeners to what's going on?
Sure. So many of your listeners may be surprised to know, but under the law in Queensland, which is specifically Section 76 of the Education General Provisions Act, there's an absolute entitlement for a minister of religion or a representative of a religious denominational society to enter into our public state schools for at least 1 hour per week and provide religious instruction to members of the same faith group. And that religious instruction is really religious indoctrination. It doesn't have to be an education in terms of comparing religions or providing any breadth in that sense. It can be pretty much what children would expect to hear at a Sunday school lesson in primary school, for example.
So it can be a devotional sort of exercise, as opposed to just a purely academic sort of instruction.
Indeed. Some people sort of get the impression first up that it's sort of educational, but it's not necessarily. It can be quite an indoctrination is the word I would use, but it doesn't have to be fair in any sense. It can be whatever the particular religious group wants to teach. And there's very little supervision over that. Essentially, if they're not breaking the law in terms of some strange obscenity laws or things like that, or if they're not breaking the law in terms of some crazy discrimination laws or something, they're pretty much open slather that they can teach whatever they want to. So, for example, they could teach a creationism rather than evolution if they wanted to. Yeah.
And I know we're going to get into sort of the history structure of this, but understanding though, right now there's a legal controversy over the Noosa Temple of Satan and this program. Can you tell me a little bit about just briefly what's going on there?
Sure. So I'm part of the Noosa Temple of Satan, and we are a satanic group in Australia based at Noosa on the Sunshine Coast. And it's possible to be religious and secular. So you don't have to be, it's not necessarily the case that all religious groups are non-secular. So we happen to be very keen on promoting secular laws. So we've looked at this law as it currently stands, and we've decided to apply for the same privilege. So we have submitted the necessary forms to the schools and to the department, saying that you've got this program that's open to all religions. We want to conduct satanic religious instruction lessons. We have three families across four schools who have changed the enrollment of their children to say that they want that instruction. And it's a means of highlighting, if you like, the fact that if you want freedom of religion and you want these privileges, then it has to extend to all religious groups. And some people are quite shocked that that might mean that Satanists get a run in this sort of thing.
And so you've made the applications, and I'm assuming the applications have been denied by the state government.
Correct. Yes. Okay. So we submitted our forms, and the schools didn't reply at all initially. And then, of course, we had to force the issue, and we got a letter from the education department saying that they did not consider the Noosa Temple of Satan to be a religious denomination or society, and were therefore not allowing us into the schools to conduct our lessons. So that was a letter which we received. The reasons they gave were fairly brief and, in my view, inadequate, and they didn't give us a chance to respond to any of the things that they raised. And so we've decided to make an application to the Supreme Court for judicial review, which is really in two parts, where we're seeking to have the original decision quashed and for the decision maker to be forced to make a fresh decision. And we're also seeking a declaration that, in fact, the Noosa Temple of Satan is a religious denominational society for the purposes of the Act. So it's two parts, quashing the original decision and seeking a declaration.
And that application is currently pending before the Supreme Court?
Correct. So that's been lodged. Affidavit material has been filed. Legal submissions are due over the next couple of months. And the hearing date is set for the 12th of August, Jeremy. So that in your diary.
I will pay close attention. I'm very curious to see how it comes out. I came across the whole controversy. I saw in the Courier Mail, there was an article. It had a picture of you. And it was just it's a really interesting issue to talk about. So that's why I'm really happy you accepted to come on the show. I thought maybe a good way to structure this would be to talk a little bit about religious education in Queensland in general, then talk a bit about the Noosa Temple of Satan, and then we can talk more about the litigation and the particular issues involved in that. So could you tell me a bit more about religious education in Queensland? Some of our listeners may not be in Queensland, or they may not be parents and have no idea that this takes place in schools. So could you tell me, I guess, when did this program start? Has this been around for a long time?
Well, 111 years, Jeremy. Wow, so it all goes back to 1910. When there was a chap called David Garland, and he was involved with a group called the Bible in State Schools League. And he was obviously very keen on students in state schools getting the opportunity to learn about the Bible. He thought that there was a risk they wouldn't hear about it in Sunday school or wouldn't go to Sunday school. So he was one of these guys who was obviously a very active evangelical sort of minister type character who lobbied extremely hard to have basically to have a referendum, which was which occurred in Queensland in 1910, and the question was, do you want the law changed so that ministers of religion can go into schools and teach religion for an hour a week? And that referendum was passed back in 1910, and so it's been on the books ever since.
Okay.
That's how it all started. And one man, he was quite instrumental in Western Australia, South Australia and New Zealand as well. So really at the time, there really wasn't a lot of interest in it. It didn't spark a lot of debate. And he was obviously dead keen on the law being put in place, but there was a lot of disinterest from the regular sort of mainstream church groups. And it was a referendum where the actual voting was not compulsory. So while it was passed 56% to 43%, in the end, only 28.5% of voters actually voted in favour of it. So it was quite a low turnout. It was mixed up with a few other referendum questions at the same time. So it snuck through, and it's been on the books ever since, slightly amended in various ways. So that's sort of how it's got into the books. And different lobby groups over time in recent 10 years have made representations to education ministers and whatnot to try and have the law reversed, but so far to no avail. So this is just drawing attention to it, this action, and who knows what might happen. We'll get to that later on, I guess.
Yeah. Sure. So you mentioned ministers actually come into the school. So it's not a public school teachers delivering religious instruction or education. How do the schools pick which ministers or from which denominations or faiths come into the schools?
It's really up to the ministers or the groups, the religious groups, to apply to the school. And they provided children of that particular denomination are in the school and have ticked the box on the enrolment form to say that they want religious instruction, then there's an absolute entitlement to go in and teach. So any Catholic priest or representative could walk into any state school and say to the principal, have any children in this school tick the box as being Catholic and wanting religious instruction? And if the answer is yes, then they are entitled to come in 1 hour a week, whether the principal likes it or not. It's just a matter of arranging a time during school hours. So that's how it comes about.
So would the kids sort of be split up and some would go to a Protestant minister and some would go to a Catholic priest and some would go to whatever other denomination?
Correct. That's the idea. So yeah. So that's my first objection to it, Jeremy, is it's a very divisive thing. When you're taking kids in grade 1, 2, and 3, and you're already splitting them up into faith groups and saying all the Christians this way, all the Jews this way, all the Muslims this way, and emphasizing a division amongst them is a really terrible thing to do, I think, at that stage in somebody's life. The second thing is that children who are not part of a religious instruction lesson, they're not allowed to do any substantive work. So they have to sit in the library and colour books or read or just do some revision. But the actual teaching of the class stops. And if you compare that to, say, music lessons, if you've got a child who does special music lessons, when they go off for their music lessons, the class continues. And when they come back, they've got to catch up. So that's quite different to what happens with this religious instruction. So, you know, the sort of lessons that are happening they're typically Christian classes, but there are other faiths involved. The Baha'i faith is quite active, I believe. But these really are Sunday school type of lessons that are being conducted, and the class is grinding to a halt while that happens.
Yeah.
And there's this division amongst the kids at the same time. So there's lots of reasons to object to it. Even if you are religious, even if you're pro-Christian and you want kids educated in your faith, you might well think, I think that should be done on Sundays in terms of efficiency of teaching of children.
Is this a sort of an opt-in process or an opt-out process? Do you know happen to know for
example? Yeah, currently it's opt-in. So it was it was opt-out until I think maybe 10 years ago or something like that. But it's an opt-in situation. And the thing is, we don't know how many kids actually get these lessons.
Hmm.
And the education department does not know.
Okay.
All they can do is say, look at the enrollment information and tell us how many kids have on their enrollment form indicated their religion and whether they're willing to have religious instruction lessons. But we don't know whether they actually end up having those lessons. There's no record keeping of that at all in the department. So I couldn't tell you how many kids in Queensland get a lesson and how many don't.
Okay.
And the department couldn't.
And presumably there's no sort of breakdown by denomination or faith as to how many children of each faith are getting the lessons. I guess it brings to mind, you know, with the school chaplaincy, in theory it's broad, but in practice the statistics indicate something like 95 or 99% of school chaplains are from a Christian faith. Is it similar with religious education, or is that just not?
Anecdotally, I could say it seems to me and others in the field that it's largely Christian groups who do this. And it's largely your sort of evangelical new Christian faiths, I guess, rather than your traditional ones. Like I can remember talking to a lady from the Uniting Church, and the more conservative traditional denominations actually struggle to find volunteers willing to do this. And they sort of take the view it's not really appropriate. So it's more that modern evangelical American style of Protestant activism that's doing it. And sure, there are some faiths, as I mentioned before, Baha'i, and there would be a few other odd faiths involved, but not that many. It's largely Christian-based, yeah.
Is this sort of program unusual, or is something like this in other Australian states, or is Queensland's more unique?
I know it's happening in New South Wales, and it was happening in Victoria, but they changed the law. Well, actually, they changed the policy so that the lessons would not occur during school hours. The lessons would occur either before or after school hours. And guess what, Jeremy? Nobody wanted to go.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
So that was effectively the end of the program in Victoria when it was listed as a before school or after school program. So kids and parents couldn't be bothered at that point. So it all crashed and burned. Yeah.
Now, I know we're going to get into some of the problems with the program. What are the, before we do, what are the sort of purported justifications or purported rationale that supporters or the government gives as to why this is an important program to have?
Well, religious people would say it's important that religious kids get instruction in their religion. That's, you know, that's their argument. The counter argument is that that should be done outside of school hours when we're talking about a public school. I mean, right. If you go to a religious private school, you'll have to accept that sort of thing is going to happen. But in our state schools, which are meant to be secular, and it's a crowded curriculum, you know, the counter argument is that it's a waste of time. And also it's, as I mentioned before, just quite divisive. So really The only thing in favour of it is that religious people think that religious kids should be taught religion. That's the sort of pros and cons.
I guess I'm curious about it because, I guess I would imagine, you know, Sunday Bible school or something like that would be the traditional way to deliver this sort of information. I wonder historically if there was a concern that not enough kids were getting to Bible school on Sunday or for some other reason why this sort of supplement to religious education would be deemed necessary, you know, during the school day, an hour a week, whatever, for whatever reason.
Yeah, well, if you're very strongly religious, you just might think even 1 hour is not enough. It should be two or three, you know.
More is better.
Yeah, okay. It's interesting that I think back at the turn of the century, there was more a fear that Catholics would end up teaching the Protestants and the Protestants would end up teaching the Catholics. There was quite a sort of a fear of the other religion stealing their membership off the other religion. And so it was quite clear with the Act that anyone purporting to teach had to only teach members of their particular faith. But there was certainly a wariness amongst Catholics and Protestants about having religion taught in school from fear of this cross-contamination, if you like. So that was sort of when the referendum was held, one of the sort of counter arguments by people who were religious was they had that sort of fear. But in the end, it was really one man who was quite adamant about this and managed to twist enough arms and convince enough people. So
to make it happen. Mm. Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about the Temple of Satan in Noosa. And I guess for specificity, is the Temple of Satan sort of part of a broader Church of Satan, or is it more of an independent temple or church? I guess, how do you see yourself as, are you part of a larger movement or more of an independent?
Very much an independent church. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So we're not part of any larger group at all. So your listeners, some of them might be, I might have heard of different satanic groups around the world. They tend to fall into two camps. You've got sort of non-theistic Satanism, which would be quite active in political movements. And those particular groups really refer to Satan in a sort of metaphorical sense. I guess they're not really into the supernatural belief, but they're quite politically active. Then the other group, and they tend to, those groups, not want to involve Satanists who do actually believe in Satan. Like they actually actively discourage them and tell them to go away. They say, we're atheists, Satanists here.
Right.
We don't want you crazy people here. So that's one group. No, quite seriously, they're very keen to sort of discourage the true believers, if you like.
The sort of Satanism that is maybe proxy isn't the right word, but is very sort of libertarian, Ayn Rand sort of objectivism, individualistic, or is that a different?
That would be different. No, I don't see those satanic groups as an Ayn Rand individualistic libertarian. Okay. No, I don't see them as that at all. They're more they're more just very pro-secular activism type of groups. Yeah.
Okay.
So the sort of groups that in America would object to the Ten Commandments statues being in public venues and things like that. So so that's sort of a group you would see. And then, of course, there would be true-believing Satanists who conduct lots of rituals and have a genuine belief in the supernatural Satan. And they are really quite difficult to find and to talk to. By their very nature, they're quite suspicious of institutions and authority, and see themselves as persecuted. So their beliefs often tend to be more of the spiritual vibe rather than a devil with a tail and a pitchfork, but more of a sense of a spiritual vibe of satanic belief, but certainly still a supernatural spirit, if you like. Okay. So generally the two camps are quite separate. Noosa Temple of Satan, we embrace everybody. We embrace supernatural believers and non-believers. So because we feel that really both groups have a lot in common, and why rule out one group when you really can be the sort of things that we're trying to promote, secular laws, for example, challenging Christian authority, challenging Christian faith, all those sorts of things fit well in both camps. So from our point of view, we embrace both. We wouldn't,
Can you tell me a little bit more about the beliefs or the tenets of the Noosa Temple of Satan?
Sure. So from our point of view, if you were to look at our Facebook page, you'd really see most of the activism is in relation to pushing secular viewpoints of whatever's happening in day-to-day events around Australia. We don't really talk much about the supernatural in that, and there's a good reason for that. It's because it's a tricky topic, and it's not, you know, I don't know about you, Jeremy, but I don't think Facebook is a good place for debate about nuanced topics.
I'm not on Facebook. I never have been. So
there you go.
I've heard bad things, I guess.
Yeah. So we really, if we're going to talk about supernatural belief, we'd do it in a face-to-face environment. So in a religious instruction class at a school, or in a chaplaincy scenario in a hospital, that would be the place where we would talk about it, where we could have a to and fro and really talk about meaningfully what it means. And we're not the sort who are going to browbeat people and force them into a particular belief. We will just say, here's one view of how the world operates, compare that with another view of how the world operates. But in terms of the actual sort of satanic, supernatural idea that we offer to people to consider would be the Satan from the Book of Job. So are you familiar with the Book of Job at all, Jeremy?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Yeah. So just for your listeners, in the Book of Job, Job is doing very well. He's got lots of wives and slaves and crops, and God is looking down and saying to Satan, look at my faithful servant Job. He worships and loves me. And Satan says, well, that's only because he's doing so well. And if he wasn't doing so well, he would curse your name. And so God gives Satan license to make Job's life a misery. And he loses his crops, his wives, his slaves, and gets pussy sores all over him. And it's a way of testing the faith of Job. And God actually sort of licenses Satan to do that. So that satanic spirit or whatever, if you like, of challenging Christian faith, challenging Christian authority, that's the sort of supernatural satanic belief that we instruct people with. And, of course, that all fits in quite well with even the non-believing Satanists, if they can have the same, you know, ends, if you like. And
I guess what it brings to my mind is the depiction of Lucifer in Milton's Paradise Lost as a sort of heroic, grand figure, completely resistant to God's authority, but the way he's depicted makes the reader almost sympathetic towards him, even though I'm sure that's probably, well, I guess I'm not sure. I assume that's not what Milton intended, but that's often an interpretation of it, is that Lucifer seems to really have a lot of appeal in Paradise Lost.
I agree, yes. Okay. So, you know, it's interesting when you look at references to Satan in the Bible, there's not that many, and there's arguments over exactly what are references and what aren't, and, you know, he's not such a bad guy.
Right.
When you look at the Book of Job and other minor references to him. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
I guess we should also clarify, because there may be some listeners who hear Satanism and their minds automatically go to, I don't know, animal sacrifice and terrible evil, you know, whatever, cruelties or something like that. That's what the Temple of Satan in Noosa is about.
No. So, no, there's no sort of crazy animal sacrifices or anything like that. So, no, nothing illegal. Yes, if there's anything illegal, it's clearly not what we're about.
Fair enough. Okay. So I guess I imagine some other people might see the Temple of Satan or Satanism in general as a sort of spoof religion or kind of proxy religion that uses the guise of religion just to challenge sort of the special privileges or special exceptions that religions traditionally get in Western societies. How would you respond to that sort of concern or suspicion?
Look, that would be true that lots of people do, and that still fits in with what a truly believing Satanist would do. And the two go hand in hand. So whether you believe or not, that sort of activity is suitable for both groups. So I don't see it as being in conflict at all. And things like standing up to the religious discrimination bill that the federal government is proposing, that in its first part will provide some protection for religious people against discrimination. But in its second part, it provides power for religious institutions to discriminate against people who are not of the religion of that institution. So Catholic schools and hospitals and other institutions will be able to discriminate against non-Catholics and especially Satanists. So where we would, be quite active in standing up against that particular law, that's something that's of benefit to all Satanists, whether they believe in Satanism or not.
Okay, and because the Temple of Noosa has a sort of Big Ten approach, it has some who may join for the sort of secularist achievements and some who have a sincere supernatural belief in Satan as a spiritual figure.
Correct, but I mean, that's really, we're sort of honest and open about that. But if you were to go to any church and take the congregation and strap them up to a lie detector, you might find quite a number of the people at a Catholic, Anglican, Jewish ceremony who actually don't believe in the God of that particular denomination, but they enjoy the cultural side of things and they believe in the doing of the good works and the activities of the church without necessarily the supernatural belief. And, those churches aren't interrogating their members and checking whether they're still believers or not and booting them out if they're not. And also the same with the priests and the clergy in these groups. There's a people Google the Clergy Project. It's an association of clergy who have lost their faith. And these are typically men who in their 50s no longer believe in their God. What else are they going to do? They're completely untrained for any other activity and they like the pastoral work that they do. So they continue doing what they're doing without emphasizing the supernatural aspect of their particular religion. So that's quite common the ministers of different faiths lose their belief but continue on with what they're doing.
I think you're right there. I mean, I think it's, sociologists of religion call it the belonging without believing. And there's the believing without belonging. And there's not always an overlap between believers and belongers in a religion because people participate for many different reasons, as you say, for cultural reasons and social reasons and all sorts of reasons beyond just a purely devotional reason.
So that was one of the reasons why our application was rejected. The education department said that not all Satanists believe in a supernatural Satan, to which we say, well, by implication, you're admitting some of them do,
right?
And that's enough. And we would also argue that no religion can claim 100% belief by all of its followers. So that was one of the reasons they gave, just while still on that topic. The other reason they gave was that Robin Bristow, who is the sort of leader, if you like, of the temple, one of his reasons for starting the temple was because of that religious discrimination bill. And the department said, well, because you started this religion, because you're objecting to that bill, we don't think you're a proper religion. But really, a religious organisation can have its objectives and goals, which are quite separate to the leader who might have started it. So they've confused Robin's personal beliefs and objectives with that of the organisation that he created. So so that'll be explained in the court hearing.
Okay, sure. Well, so let's talk about the litigation. So you mentioned there was the application to the Department of Education to have Satanism be a vehicle for religious instruction,
yes,
three families. And the response denied it. And there were a couple of different reasons given in the denial. Can you remind me of those two?
Yes. So the political genesis, where they argued Robin started the religion because of his concerns about the religious discrimination bill. They said that most Satanists don't believe that Satan exists. And they said that we didn't have enough members. So that was their reasons. And look, I've spoken to a few different legal friends of mine, and it wasn't the greatest letter that has ever been written. And we were not given a chance to address those issues. And basically, under the Judicial Review Act, you really need to have been given an opportunity to address these issues if the decision maker is going to rely on them and hasn't asked you about them in the past. So look, I've got pretty good prospects for having that decision overturned. The harder part will be the declaration that that we have to prove that we are a religious denomination or society for the purposes of the Act. But it's a pretty broad wording that's used there. A religious society is all we have to be. And a society is a group of people with a common interest, and that's us. And our common interest is Satanism. So with the ordinary meaning of the words, we have a fair chance of saying that we are a religious society.
So when you made your application to the Department of Education and the minister responded, it's like it wasn't really like a criteria or a checklist. It sounds to me more like a sort of ad hoc judgment he makes. And is it really that loose?
It is that loose. Okay. So the Queensland Act is very loose. If we were applying in New South Wales, I believe there's a much more rigorous procedure of things that you have to prove and do. But in Queensland, really, it just is as of right for a representative of a religious society to teach. There's nothing else. Fill in the form that they give you, and the form just says, what are your names and addresses, and do you have a blue card? And that's about it. So they don't ask for much. Yeah.
Okay.
So they certainly didn't ask, how many members have you got? What was the genesis of your group? Who believes in your group? No, none of that was asked. So it was quite unfair to reject us without asking any of that stuff at the beginning.
And presumably, as long as you have ministers or others available to teach the requested religious instruction in the schools where it's requested, that would be enough to satisfy that.
Yeah, well, originally the Act was phrased to say only ministers of religion could teach, but they ran out of ministers to get around to all the schools. So the Act was amended to say that an accredited representative of a religious denomination or society. So you don't have to be so I was listed as one of the teachers for the Noosa Temple of Satan. So as a representative of the group. So it's actually why the case is actually in my name. So I have standing because the decision directly affected me in that I wasn't able to teach. And so so the actual case, I am the applicant in this particular proceedings. This is sort of interesting for you, Jeremy. So I'm a lawyer. I mean, I actually stopped practicing back in 2001 and And I wasn't enjoying law and went and did other things. And it was only once I got involved in this in recent times that I renewed my practicing certificate. So, so in talking to Robin, and this is interesting for political activism, if you like, or just, you know, enforcing your rights, is I really couldn't guarantee to him that he would win, and I couldn't guarantee that he would not be faced with a costs order if he lost. Right. And so Robin, because of his personal circumstances, really couldn't commit to a court case. And but I had standing, and I thought, you know what, if I can't, there's got to be a time and a place where you put your foot down or draw a line in the sand and say, no, I'm going to take this on. So I did it in my own name, and I was alerted to a provision in the Judicial Review Act, Section 49, which basically says that if you've got a matter which is like a test case, so what will be decided will have relevance beyond the specifics of your case. If you've got merit to your case, like it's not completely fanciful, if you've got a case of some sort, and if there's great disparity in resources, and in this case, my resources versus the state of Queensland, there's certainly a disparity.
Sure.
Then if you can meet that criteria, then you can ask the court to tell you in advance or to make an order in advance that no matter what happens in the final proceeding, each side will bear their own costs. Hmm. And that came about through some law reform commission recommendation because people were scared to give things a go because of fear of costs. So I don't think that section's been utilised very much. And the Education Department actually consented to that application and said, yep, fair enough. And so no matter what happens, Jeremy, I will continue to live in this house where I am at the moment. It happens to be my wife's house, but I continue to live in it. So there we go. Yeah.
Well, no, it's funny you mentioned that, because one of the things I do teach my constitutional law students is one of the reasons there's so much constitutional litigation in the United States compared to Australia. You know, the High Court only decides maybe 5 constitutional law cases a year in Australia, is because in the United States, there's Section 1983, which says if you file a civil rights or civil liberties claim, you're only going to be responsible for your own costs, not for the government's costs. In Australia, that's not necessarily the case, and no one wants to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars of the government's, you know, legal fees if they lose. That's just a risk most people can't take. So it's good that there are these mechanisms, potential statutory mechanisms, whether maybe they're underused, but could make litigation more feasible for the average individual wanting to sort of enforce a claim like this.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know that. So that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess getting back to the legal issue. So you mentioned there's a sort of procedural fairness type issue in that you weren't given a chance to respond or sort of rebut the claims of the minister. And then there's also a sort of interpretation of what counts as a religion issue. Is that religion definition of religion issue, is that a statutory term in Queensland that has a definition, or are you going to have to rely on the High Court's interpretation of religion from the Scientology case, or do you know about that yet?
So there is no statutory definition, and in fact the Education Department's own policy says that they rely on the decision in the Scientology case for determining what is a religion. So for your listeners who are unaware, in the Church of Scientology case, it's actually an interesting case for people who have never heard of it, Jeremy. We'll just spend a couple of minutes
sure,
on that.
Please.
Yeah. So the Church of Scientology back in the 80s was applying for a tax exemption in relation to payroll tax in Victoria, and the Victorian Supreme Court basically found that the Church of Scientology had artificially dressed itself up to look like a religion and had adopted rituals and practices in a cynical and shameless attempt to look like a religion that was quite fake. And on that basis said, you're not a religion and you're not entitled to this tax exemption. And Church of Scientology appealed, went to the High Court, and the High Court said that's absolutely correct in that the leadership of the Church of Scientology were very cynical and constructed this artificial device to make it look like a religion, but there were people who believed what they had come up with, and that was essentially enough to make Scientology a religion. So, and that's been the case. And really what they said in that was that in order to have a religion, there needs to be a belief in a supernatural being, thing, or principle, and acceptance of canons of conduct which give effect to that belief, but which do not offend against the ordinary laws. So really that's the criteria for a religion. And I think it's pretty clear that Satanism is a religion. And really the question in this case is going to be whether the Noosa Temple of Satan is a religious society or not. So I don't think we're going to be arguing too much about Satanism itself. It's going to be more about the activities of the temple and what have we been doing, where it's going to get, where the arguments are going to reside, I think.
I should give a caveat too that it's the notorious things with the Scientology case is we have the majority split into three different ways. So two have one definition, two have another definition, and then one justice has yet a third definition. And I think the High Court hasn't conclusively clarified which definition is going to be the one going forward. But I think you're right that the one that tends to be followed is the supernatural, belief in the supernatural and the canons of conduct. So let's approach it from that way. So it sounds like there's some members of the Temple of Satan in Noosa that have a supernatural belief. Are there sort of codes of conduct or canons of conduct that you think would meet that element of the test if it came down to that?
Well, we're basing it on the Book of Job, and it's that challenging of Christian authority and challenging of Christian faith that is the conduct that we see as essential to being a Satanist.
Okay.
So to us, that's the conduct that's required, and that's the manifestation of that belief, if you like. Mm.
One of the areas that I tend to do some research on is the spiritual but not religious, which can be sort of New Age believers or sometimes Wiccans or pagans. And one of the things they often have difficulty establishing themselves as a religious freedom claim or religious discrimination claim is they're able to show a belief in the supernatural, but sometimes they have difficulty establishing that sort of canons of conduct or sort of tenets or that sort of institutional type of religion that sometimes courts really look towards. So that's why I'm very curious to see how this will come out.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? Jeremy might end up in the High Court myself.
It very well might. You could be.
You never know.
But, another thing, I guess, that when I first read the newspaper article about your case, what came to mind was, you could win, but still lose. Could Queensland just change its law, change its regulations or statute here on religious education, and specifically say no Satanism? Would there be any sort of bar to them doing that if it looks like you're going to win?
I guess the Queensland government could always pass a law that was blatantly discriminating against a particular religion. I mean, there's anti-discrimination acts, but I guess they can just consider themselves not bound by those and pass laws. I haven't really looked into that in depth. I think they'd be quite out. There'd be outrage from the community if that was the case, because we have had a bit of publicity and the response that we've got has largely been very positive, where people say, one in, all in. If it's good enough for one religion, then it's good enough for all of them is very much the response we get. So it would be quite a brave government that decided to pass a law that said every religion except Satanism is allowed into the schools. And in fact, Grace came out in the Courier Mail and said Satanism will never be taught in Queensland schools.
Right.
We'll see, but I think it would be a very brave government that did that. And from our point of view, Jeremy, if it gets attention, if there's publicity, if there's talk, if people are looking at this for the first time and going, what do you mean these classes are going on? And what do they do in these classes? And every week for an hour? Like the raising of awareness would be a victory in itself if people just become aware and then pressure's applied for change. That's how I view it. And, you know, ultimately, if we lose and the court says that you guys don't do something that would qualify you as a religious denomination, then we'll spend the next year or two doing whatever we're supposed to do. We'll change and evolve and take on whatever practices or necessary things we need to do, and we'll just have another crack at it in a year or two if that's the case. Yeah.
Okay. Do you have any sense of how long you think this litigation will last or what the next steps will be?
So, it's set down for the 12th of August. We have to swap legal submissions between now and then. There's some dates for that.
Will there be a trial, or is this all be settled on submissions?
There'll be cross-examination. So affidavits have been lodged, and so there'll be some cross-examination of the evidence in those affidavits. So at this stage, the Crown said that a day should be enough. So that's I've got no experience in this, so I'm relying on them. And at this stage, about a day is what we're expecting.
And if you're successful, what will be the implications of this on a sort of broader scale? Do you think there'll be other smaller religious groups that may also try and gain access? Will this be a sort of a start of something bigger?
I think they'll change the law. I think they will. I think they'll say something like, we can't stop these crazy Satanists. The Supreme Court have made this decision. So the only thing we can do is stop the program. Mm. Would probably be my guess that they would do that rather than have Satanists coming into a school. I mean, people are quite frightened by the idea. So yeah. I'm afraid I might come across as too reasonable and sort of and take away some of that fear. But the sort of level of just Christian outrage will mean that I think they'll change the law. And look, the other aspect of all this, Jeremy, is, you know, there's groups at the moment talking about this religious discrimination bill, and people like the Australian Christian Lobby and Freedom for Faith and other groups like that who are arguing vehemently for freedom of religion and how it needs to be protected, how new laws have to be in place, how the government must pass this religious discrimination bill. None of them have come out in support of us. Mm. None of them, like, they're talking about Israel Folau and his right to play football, but here's a little temple in Noosa trying to give a religious instruction class, and we're being knocked back by the government, and nothing. It's just crickets from these groups. So it exposes the hypocrisy of these people when they say that they're all in favour of religious freedom and they won't lift a finger in support of us. What it shows is they're really in favour of Christian privilege, not religious freedom. And I think they're exposed with this, and they're hoping we lose, because if we win, it will cause them all sorts of problems in that regard.
I mean, I guess to play devil's advocate, which is,
please.
I think part of that might be because it's a very new religious organization. I assume, though I don't know, maybe you're not part of sort of the interfaith sort of alliances and communities and conferences that exist across Australia. Do you think there may be a time in the future where you are given more support if you sort of establish more ties in a broader religious sense? Or do you think you're always going to be sort of on the outside looking in?
Jeremy, religions are anti-satanic. I mean, this Satan in their religions is an evil being. They can't sit in a room with a pro-Satanist and not be just appalled. I mean, if they take their religion seriously, then how can they? I mean, we would go. We would love to be invited to some of these multi-faith events and actually provide the secular alternative to what goes on at these things. But I won't hold my breath waiting for an invitation. Although it's interesting, like I've been involved with different groups like the humanists, the rationalists, the National Secular Lobby. They can't get a foot in the door when it comes to a government minister and speaking to them. And yet we've got a meeting with Amanda Stoker in a few weeks' time, who is the assistant to the minister regarding the Religious Discrimination Bill. And it's because we said, you're meeting with all these faith groups, you've been tweeting and Facebooking about these meetings. We want a meeting as well. Why can't we have one? And she relented and gave us one. So, so it just goes to show sometimes you have to do these things in order to get an audience and prove a point. And these very well-meaning secular groups, they haven't had a meeting and they're not going to get one. So,
So let's assume, you know, best outcome, you win this case. Are there other battles on the horizon you see in the future?
Yes, other battles on the horizon would be, I just made some notes here before, let me see. Well, religious instruction in other states. So we would definitely, if we conduct a few lessons in Queensland, we will then go into New South Wales and say, we're experienced providers of religious instruction, let us in. And we'd conduct something on the tweed heads, nice and close.
Okay.
So that would be one thing we would do. Chaplaincy. So there's lots of chaplaincy in schools, hospitals, the military, and believe it or not, the Olympics, Jeremy. Oh, did you know the Olympics has a chaplaincy program?
So you need to get ready for 2032.
Exactly.
Okay.
I want a front row seat. In the athletes' village, as a chaplain.
Nice.
And if Christian and other faith groups are allowed in as chaplains in the Olympics, then we'll be applying for that. So, so that's one. And it's not related to satanic work so much. Prayers and counsel will be another one that we'll possibly involved in, but there are other better arguments other than the sort of discrimination argument on that score. So.
I've read about some of those cases in the United States where Satanists have challenged to be included in giving prayers before legislative assemblies and city councils and things like that. And
yes.
It's been successful. So,
Yeah. So that's one that we would look at. I think Luke Beck came up with an ultra vires argument. Are you familiar with that one at all?
I'm familiar with Luke Beck. I'm not exactly sure of the argument you're talking about.
Right. So he came out with an argument that was essentially under the legislation, the councils are empowered to conduct the business of a local government, and that does not include saying prayers. Mm-hmm. And there was a British case which looked at this and determined that councils, without a specific legislative provision enabling them to say prayers, they were not entitled to say it at the beginning of their meetings. So that would be the first attempt to take on Christian prayers. And then if the government then passed laws to say they could say prayers, then we would have to look at a discrimination case if they wouldn't allow satanic prayers. So all in good time.
Sure. Well, I know I've taken up a lot of your time.
Yeah.
Do you have anything you'd like to add before we wrap up?
Oh, if you've got any lawyers listening to this who are really listening and think they'd like to help at some stage, just shoot me an email. I've got a podcast called The Iron Fist and the Velvet Glove. And if you just Google Iron Fist Velvet Glove, you'll see our website. Make contact, reach out. It would be nice to create a little team of lawyers who might help with some of this activism in the years to come, especially experienced ones, because I really am flying by the seat of my pants on this. I'm not experienced in these areas of law at all, but I'm just giving it a go. So if there are lawyers listening who think they'd like to be involved, reach out, and it'd be nice to create a little team that takes on sort of Christian legal think tanks like Freedom for Faith. Yeah.
All right. Well, Trevor Bell, thank you so much for speaking with me today. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Listeners, I'll place some links in the show notes if you're interested in learning more about this controversy. On a separate note, usually at the end of every episode, I recommend a book or another podcast in the area of law and religion. This time around, I want to recommend Malcolm Knox's book, Truth is Trouble, The Strange Case of Israel Folau, or How Free Speech Became So Complicated. Malcolm Knox is a sports writer for the Sydney Morning Herald and definitely understands the sports side of the controversy, but he also provides a nuanced and thoughtful account of why the Folau controversy has proven so difficult to resolve. And as of this recording, continues to make newspaper headlines. It's a great read, and I'll also put a link to that in the show notes. That's it for now. If you have questions, comments, or topic suggestions, please email me at jeremy.patrick@usq.edu.au. I'll be back in 2 months with another episode of Law and Religion Down Under. Thanks for listening.